Hi, I'm Gordon Lamphere, and welcome to the Real Finds podcast, where we have real conversations with key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers who are shaping the real estate industry and, as a result, our world. On today's podcast, we'll be speaking with Rory Rubin, founder of SI Container Builds. On the podcast, she explains how SI Container Builds uses shipping containers to manufacture sustainable steel-framed housing. Her housing is 10% cheaper and 50% faster than traditional builds. We hear how her company is tackling Chicago's housing crisis, partnering with Habitat for Humanity, local developers, and redefining what affordable looks like. It's a must-watch episode if you care about innovation, sustainability, and the future of housing.
Rory, thanks for hopping on the podcast today.
Hi, good morning.
So why real estate? You had a background that's a non-traditional real estate background. What got you to the world of real estate?
I'm getting more comfortable sharing my journey because at first it was very odd, but now I can understand how it kind of ties together. So in the first part of my life, I was a clinical social worker. I actually started off with Alzheimer's disease and working in the mental health arena and all of that, and just kind of migrated into sales and healthcare and then consulting, and all of that sort of brought me to the aha moment when I woke up in my late 40s and I said, you know what, I'm having my midlife crisis and I want to start a business. And the joke between myself and my husband is, are you sure you want to do that? Maybe you just want to buy a car, because that seems common for someone having a midlife crisis. And I said, nope, this is what I want to do. And ultimately, it was because we want to live more sustainably. We knew we were going to be empty nesters soon. And my dad is an architect, so it's not so strange that I had a passion for looking at architecture and sustainability. And when I started to poke around and realizing that other countries have been repurposing the shipping container for decades very well, I said, this is exactly what I want to do. And so it is weird. I mean, I do have some business background, but it's not the traditional real estate. But that's okay, because you know what we do is we try to surround ourselves with the people that really can supplement the things that you don't know. And that's what we've done over the last 7 years.
So your real estate company is also non-traditional. So what got you into the world of container homes specifically?
So we don't actually consider ourselves a real estate company. We actually are a manufacturer. So we have a factory outside of the Chicagoland area where we are able to build to scale. So we are able to buy one trip containers right off the dock. It's really nice that we live in the Chicagoland area because they can come off a rail. We're in the Great Lakes. It comes right off of the port and they transport right up here. And then we can build all year round in our factory, so we don't have to worry about the Chicago weather. And from that, I guess it is a piece of real estate, because obviously we're trying to solve problems like affordable housing and things like that. But we're doing it in what you just mentioned, a non-traditional format. I mean, we're especially in the Chicagoland area, we're the only steel framed manufacturers right now in the state. We're also the only licensed and certified container repurposers in the state. There are other fabricators, but we build to turnkey, so we can do that all year round.
So real estate's been built for a long time outside of a factory. What are the unique advantages or disadvantages of working within a factory real estate setting instead of a traditional site-built home?
You know, it's a really great question. That is probably something that I am most passionate about, is to talk about what modular construction really means and the ability to save people time and money. That has been documented. I have documentation around how we save from working so we don't have to be on site. Forget the weather issue that we all have in the Midwest, where people, you know, when projects have to stop because it's a torrential downpour or it's freezing cold or it's boiling hot and I don't have to deal with that. I literally can manufacture something so much faster and so much cheaper than being on site. And we really, if you go to our website and our blogs, will showcase how we do that. And that's why we're doing it, because we're in a housing crisis. I don't need to tell you that, Gordon, you get that. We, especially in the Chicagoland area, are desperate for housing that is affordable. And I wish I could say I'm cheap, but I'm less expensive, but for a great quality. And nothing is cheap, because I'm building to code. So I'm still using the materials that other people are using, but I can buy them to scale, because we're doing more in our factory.
So in terms of a factory built setting, one of the things that I often hear is that it uses a lot less labor. Is that true, or is it more about efficient labor than maybe less?
So I wouldn't say use less labor. I would say efficient labor is a really great way to look at it. So I can actually, the way our flow would work, I would know when our electricians are coming in, when our certified plumbers are coming in, when our certified drywallers are coming in, and spray foam and all of that. So we are able to, if you think of sort of almost like an assembly line, we are able to do that in a way that is just much more efficient than if we have to deal with weather or other on-site trouble. Now, I will say the easiest part is the build. I say this all the time, because I still have to work like other people with zoning and permitting, you know, making sure that the site work is complete, although we can do the build at the same time the site work is being done, which is really nice. But there's, you know, these, I still have the same challenges that other build will have when it comes to some of those things. But then from the supplement is that I'm going to be able to produce something so much faster. So our developers are getting a better ROI, and that makes a big difference. So Chicago, bring on your weather.
So in terms of bringing it on, one of the things I'd be interested in learning about is you hear a lot when people talk about modular construction or manufactured homes or a variety of more manufactured based real estate alternatives that, that there's no customization, that it's like, you know, it's like Henry Ford's Model T. You can have it any color you want, just make it black, right? And so are these homes still customized, or is it pretty pretty standard?
So I really wanted to make sure that if we were going to be standardizing something, it wasn't going to make somebody feel like it wasn't their own personal home. So to answer the question, there are some things that are standardized. So people would be able to pick out layouts. But on the same breath, those layouts were standardized so that we know that they're going to fit into a certain area. People are able to pick out their finishing, their cabinetry, their countertops, their, you know, accessories, the paint color, the cladding. So my favorite thing to say is, if you don't like the look of a container, I'm going to clad it to match your home. So when we put our office in our backyard, and our municipality said, you're not putting a rusty old box in your backyard. And I said, well, wait, it's first of all, not a rusty old box, because I only use a one trip container. So it's crossed the ocean one time. And I'm going to clad it to match my stucco home. And they're like, what? And so when they saw it, they're like, wow, that's really cool. And when you walk inside, it feels like a home. And it feels like it's not a mobile home. We're not talking about a mobile home park. This is something that's going to have your structural integrity of Core 10 steel. So it's going to outlive the stick frame homes that we live in. But yet it is the advantage of something that has more charm to it, so that it will blend in. One of our partnerships in the making right now is with Habitat for Humanity, and we customize a home for them. And when we do some other projects, like the one that we just placed on at Navy Pier, a commercial project, a bespoke project, because it's very unique right on the Navy Pier Marina, but it's very different. And then our girls trafficked home that we're working with HODC and Shelter Inc. and DCFS and Palatine. It's a 7,000 square foot group home for girls who've been trafficked. It's going to be cladded completely to blend into the Palatine community. So your answer is, I guess, a little wordy on my end, but we do customization. But when we do it on the inside, there's also standardization to how we do things.
So what inspired you to take on that Palatine project? I think it's kind of a unique build out for the market, and kind of a unique way to tackle an issue that I know it's near and dear to our heart. How do you go about that, and kind of how do you blend containers with the Palatine community?
So I feel really blessed. And I think that this is exactly where that little string of social work kind of came together for me as a business person, is that I'm now able to build projects that really are driving purpose and are really well needed. And we're partnering with HODC and Richard Koenig, who is a very seasoned, well-respected nonprofit developer. And he and I had a relationship, and it was sort of in his mind's eye that this was coming. And he knew Karina Santa Maria, who's she's the CEO of Shelter Inc. And that relationship was building, and they wrote a grant that was funded by DCFS. It was so many people coming together at the same time that said, we have a solution, let's do this. And then when we went to Palatine, and Palatine, you know, like every municipality, you're going to build what with what? And we said, let us, you know, pitch to you and show you what it is. And they have been phenomenal to work with. They, you know, they want to make sure we're building to code and that we're following everything that Palatine, the municipality, is dictating. But the home is something that in Illinois, there's not only nothing like it, but there's nothing for these young girls that are coming in off the streets and they're sleeping on their social workers' floors. So there's the purpose around that. So the containers were just a wonderful sustainable way of bringing something to fruition a whole heck of a lot faster that has just never been done before. So we're really excited about this and hope to be able to do many more passion-driven projects.
So I know you've done some passion-driven projects, but one of the things that can get incredibly passionate and incredibly feisty is zoning and some of the challenges around getting projects done in a municipality. I'm curious, how is modular housing in Chicago, particularly modular housing in containerized developments, played out in terms of community reception? And how do you get by some communities that maybe are less willing to take a alternative to the traditional housing model?
I appreciate the conversation, because I really do believe I spend 85% of my time around education. So I've taught classes that I've had to really help people understand a few really key components that are lost to people. Is number one, containers have been legally allowed to be repurposed for both residential and commercial use since 2016 in the ICC codes. And my fellow people like Stephen Shang down in Austin, Texas, they are the people that lobbied to say, we know we can repurpose this like anything else, and have been able to legalize that. And so that's been very important, that most municipalities don't even realize that they're already legal. So if the first line of defense is, oh, well, we don't have container homes, they're not legal, that's actually not true. The second education piece is the whole blending piece, is that if I can tell you that I'm going to build you a steel structure that has lower maintenance and it's going to outlive what we're typically currently living in our homes all over Chicagoland, forget the whole United States, wouldn't you be more interested in learning about that from a maintenance standpoint? So we look at that, and we have proven data around that. And then comes the blending piece. If I can show you that it's not a rusty old box and that I can have it blend into whichever community, be it a stucco, be it brick, be it like a cabin, like a hunting cabin, having hardy board so that it looks like whatever you want it to look like, do you think that it's something that you would really embrace? And so it's getting in front of the municipalities and doing a lot of education around what they may have had been misinformed in the past. I do a lot of myth busting. The internet has not been my friend. You know, we think
about the box. I think there are a lot of people that
I spend this time like responding, and sometimes I'm so aggravated. I'm like, why am I bothering responding to this person who bought, you know, I can buy a container anywhere. I'm like, and I can repurpose it. And I'm like, okay, good luck. You know, fine. You know, I have licensed trade that has spent years figuring out how to do this correctly and doing this properly. And the internet is telling me that they can do it for $5,000. And I'm like, okay. You know, and so you just kind of deal with that. But I do think my job is education so that people can understand I'm not so weird. When you walk inside the container home, it looks exactly like all of the homes we live in, because I'm using the same drywall and cabinets and countertops and flooring and HVAC systems and, you know, all of these things. But I'm also sustainable and green and making sure that everything is done exactly the way we should. So I am hoping people will start to embrace it quicker as I start to get more engaged out there. This is the second year it hasn't been announced officially, but I got the notice that I am a Crane sustainability leader. And so from that standpoint, at Crane's is recognizing the fact that what we're doing is really purpose driven and important. And I'm just hoping eventually I won't have to spend so much time around it. People will just understand.
So let's talk about sustainability then. So one of the things that I know that people mention sometimes in modular housing is that it recycles what would be a traditionally, potentially, you know, point of waste in terms of global logistics. But are there other parts of the project that are sustainable, or is that the primary sustainability driver?
Yeah, so I will talk briefly just about that so that people recognize we're sort of in an environmental crisis where I have 26 million shipping containers laying around. I don't think people realize that we don't ship them back. It is cheaper for China to reproduce a new one than for us to ship a container back empty. So when we're driving down the highway and you're seeing them stacked, there's typically a container graveyard because people, if we don't take them and recycle them, it's not going to be recycled. And so you're just going to see these boxes that are stacked high. And that is a real problem that people think, oh, they're just storing things in them. They're really not. And so from that standpoint, there's the big core of sustainability. But then we take it a few steps farther. We have data point that talks about our carbon footprint and how we're doing what we're doing and why. But we're also doing things like using mini splits and being all electric and using recycling product whenever we can with the vendors that we're using, because we know how important it really is to the environment. So whatever we do driving forward really does make a difference. We are doing solar now, which I wish I could say is the best way to do it, but unfortunately still expensive way to do it. But for people who want to do solar and want to be more sustainable in that way, it's not always something that they can do because of the affordability piece.
So when we're talking about affordability, one of the big things that's come up is probably 90% of our podcasts is financing and kind of housing affordability from the financing angle, particularly in this low liquidity market. Are there any differences to how homes are financed or homes are built out in terms of the financing process with modular homes versus maybe more of a traditional home that's built on site?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. It's a question that I know people still struggle with in certain areas, and it's unfortunate because it really shouldn't be a difference. If we're building with the exact same material and I know what my core tense steel structure is, it should be easy to be able to get the similar comps than anything else. Steel is just a better conduit for multiple building purposes versus timber. And so if you can do that and just say, okay, I put the steel structure aside, now everything else inside is exactly the same. 3 bedrooms, 2 baths. Now I can do my comp. But I do say I have heard that it is still challenging for some people, but it's getting easier. And I have people. So when people call me and say, do you know somebody that can do insurance? I know State Farm is really great with that. Do you know somebody that can do the comps for, you know, for the bank? We do know people now that can help with that because they're used to dealing with those things. I will say, Gordon, one of the pieces that we have really shifted at SI Container Builds is that we don't do direct to consumer anymore. So I typically do not work with individuals unless it's with for a local ADU, backyard space, because we're here. We work with developers, nonprofits, other commercial entities because of that challenge was really slowing up what we were trying to do. So when we work with more seasoned people instead of an individual, they tend to be able to push that stuff forward a lot easier than we can.
So how do insurers then look at your homes versus, you know, some of the more traditional uses? Is it seen as a benefit? Is it seen as uncertainty? Kind of what's the insurance angle look like?
Well, so far, everything that we have produced has been insured properly, exactly the way they would normally insure at any other house. They have basically taken the fact that it is made out of Core 10 steel and sort of moved that aside, knowing that the steel is better against fire. Like, I'm not going to be burning down, and we know our fire rating. So that's a really good thing. And then they look at sort of the traditional ways that they would do comps for any other house. So far, the developers and other commercial spaces that have had to deal with it have not had issues. It's just getting better. And it's all about education, right? Once people are out there and doing it and more comfortable, then they can see, oh, this isn't so weird. And when we do tours in our factory, we have a closed factory, but we often have people asked to come by that are doing development work. And they come and they're like, oh, this is not what I thought. This is very traditional. You're using steel studs, so now I know they're not going to burn. You're doing the flooring exactly the same. You're putting the mini splits in. You're working with so-and-so as a sub, but that's great. We've worked with them before too. So it's not so unique. It's just unique, especially to this area, and where other countries have been doing this for decades. And so it's pulling that data and then having people see it. And once they can see it, they get more comfortable with it.
So one of the things that we talked about on one of our recent podcasts is communities getting more comfortable with ADUs. I know you mentioned ADUs earlier, and that's one of the areas where you're direct to consumer. I'm curious kind of how that's played out, how you've seen your containerized housing work in the ADU space. It would be, you know, my ignorant assumption, but that's probably one of the perfect applications of it. How have you seen it play out?
If you see all the gray hair that I have in between here, it's probably because of ADUs. And I know a lot of people that are fighting the good fight in the Chicagoland area, especially in the city proper around ADUs, and have been for several years. And then you look at other states like California and Massachusetts, and there's a few others that have literally passed completely throughout the whole state legal mandates for all ADUs, because they do know it is a solution to having affordable housing. And Chicago has been dragging their feet for so long. I can literally build you a one bedroom place in 2 weeks. So when I tell you I can build that in 2 weeks, it could be 2 years before you get that unit. And not because I can't build it fast. It's because of all of the regulatory issues that they did a pilot in Chicago. It was a 3-year pilot that has turned into a 5-year pilot that has still not passed yet. But I know people like Steve Vance are fighting the good fight and really doing a great job to get this passed, because it is the whole NIMBY concept, not in my backyard. But this isn't for an Airbnb. This is for an adult parent who can't afford a nursing space but still wants to live independently. An adult child that can't afford rent because our rents have gotten so astronomical that they have no space to go, but they want some independence as well. This is mandatory. This should not be an issue anymore to have ADUs in people's backyards. But it is still an issue, unfortunately.
So one of the big issues that we've also looked at is housing in the commercial space, particularly multifamily, and kind of how that's played out in terms of building projects all throughout the Chicagoland area. So how have containerized homes played out from your end in the multifamily and kind of commercial space?
Yeah, it's great. We're working on a really great multifamily project right now. It's actually just over the border. It's not even in the state of Illinois, but that doesn't mean that it's not coming for Illinois for us as well. We are talking with developers to do this because containers are made to be stacked. So they're made to be stacked 9 high as they come over on the ships, you know, and then with a good structural engineer and added in structural steel, you can stack them even higher. You look at places like Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. and New York City and Atlanta and Nashville, they have all multifamilies made out of containers. And so it's coming and it's been done before. I'm not the newbie. It's just the newbie here. And I can do it faster and cheaper. And wouldn't that be wonderful? And it's steel, like a lot of our beautiful skyscrapers in downtown Chicago are already steel. So it's already kind of tried and true. We are getting there. So, but our first multifamily, unfortunately, will be just over the border in another state. And then we hopefully will be able to get Chicago to say, wow, okay, we get it. You can do this. And that's really great.
When you mentioned cheaper, how much cheaper would you say relatively are we talking? Are we talking a couple cost savings in pennies? Are we talking vastly cheaper? What should our listeners kind of generally understand about the process?
We are traditionally out the door 10% cheaper. And so, you know, if we're talking about affordable housing, you know, missing middle, more luxury, that all plays in. Because if you're going to go after a more luxury crowd, I might not be cheaper. I'm also not cheapest. So the one thing that we have realized that has been difficult, and we're working on it, is how do we get, if we're doing anything in the homeless communities? Because people often think, well, containers might be good for that. Unfortunately, because I built a code, the cost is still there. But right out the door, I can tell you I'm 10% cheaper and up to 50% faster. So from that standpoint, to be able to build something faster, you'll get your ROI with that. And then we build with bulk so that we talk with our container brokers all over the country and we broker our containers right off the docks. So when we do that, we get a price break on that. And so all of those things just help with that cost affordability for us.
Well, 10% cheaper and 50% faster isn't the worst thing in the world. And in terms of one of the worst things that we deal with, though, in the Chicagoland area, it's been just that missing middle. And I know you mentioned it earlier. How have you seen containerized housing play out in that? Do you think it is ultimately primarily a missing middle solution? Or is it have better applications?
I would say that might be our sweet spot, is to really support the missing middle because of what we just talked about, being faster and less expensive in that way. And we are working with some developers around that in the city of Chicago now so that they can see. I have, in my opinion, my favorite, I call my little mini multifamily. I have that is out there for people to see where it is. You can do it in two different styles. It can be a 3-flat or it can be a two flat where you have a rental up on top. And that, you know, we're building for, you know, in the $300,000 range. And that's a pretty good market for people to have instant rentability in the home that they're going to be buying. And now you're building generational wealth. Now you're building something that is faster to build. It's a great infill piece for the city. And so I love my little missing middle mini. It's terrific. It's a great build.
So you talked about generational wealth. How long approximately are we talking that these containerized homes last? Are they comparable to your traditional build, or are we talking longer or shorter in duration?
So that is, it's one of my biggest myth busters. We have a really good thing going where we're at in our factory. We are next door to Vapor Bus, and that organization builds all of the, when you in your bus system and the train system, all of doors that open and they go up and they do all those systems. And they have a simulator in their factory, and so we, a weather simulator. So we were able to take a piece of our Corten steel and paint it, and we found that without any maintenance that that lasted 26 years. And so that's pretty cool just from a painting standpoint. We also have data points that say when properly maintained, like your regular home, our homes are going to outlast our stick frame homes, and they're going to be able to last over 100 years. Right now I live in a house that's over 100 years old, and we all know how much maintenance homes can cost. We know that our home will be less maintenance because the Corten steel, it just is weatherproofed in a better way.
So one of the things that, you know, we're talking about on the podcast just generally is kind of AI and how AI is going to affect operations. How do you see that playing out with more containerized modular housing versus maybe your more traditional site-built homes? Mm-hmm. And do you think as AI kind of shifts, are we going to see maybe more of an advantage in one or the other?
So we're already using AI. So we have partnered with an organization called Merlin AI for all of our technology. And what we're doing with that is that it's allowing us to purchase better. It's allowing us to evaluate time to build better. It's allowing us to evaluate all kinds, because it learns as we're doing all of that. And that's just at a really basic level. I see other companies, there's a 3D printing company out there for homes. I think that's pretty darn cool. I think AI is certainly here to stay. We're actually interested in getting into the whole data center arena because we know that they use containers all the time when they're building in the data centers. And so AI, you know, it's certainly, I am of the generation, I'm going to say it to all of your listeners, and I grew up without a computer or a cell phone. I'm in my 50s. And so I think it's very funny when I see my kids, that to them, they don't know anything different. And so for us, however we can incorporate technology that makes things more efficient, which will bring costs down, we're all in for that. But we still also then have the sustainability factor. It's the green factor that kind of weaves in all of those things together.
I'll admit this. I am of the generation that knows both the before and after, because that was my childhood. I remember the first day that internet came to our house. That'll be funny when my kids are old enough to be able to explain that to them, because they're going to be like, now, what's this dial-up sound?
Right.
In terms of that, let's get into our final four. It's always kind of a nice way to wrap up, and I think this is a perfect transition. So one of the things that we always love to ask about is, where do you see commercial real estate going 10 years from now? Particularly with the ideas of, you know, containerized housing, AI. Where are we going?
I think we will become more efficient. I think that we have no choice but to become more competitive. You know, one of the things that is always troubling is that we don't look to other countries to see what they have done well. And we're so afraid sometimes to incorporate those things now. One of the things that we do in my organization is that we really do spend a lot of time partnering and talking with other people. And I don't think of people as being my competitors. I really think of people as being my collaborators. And if you're doing something that is really working well for you, and you're being able to produce something to market cheaper and faster, I want to know about that, because that's really then driving how we do our business to the consumer, be it a commercial space or a residential developer or nonprofit. And all of those things are truly, truly important to us as we go. We have to be comfortable with change. We have to be comfortable to pivot, and we have to be comfortable to grow. I mean, that's really what it takes, or we're going to become obsolete, because anybody can become obsolete.
So talking about becoming obsolete, one of the things we always like to talk about is kind of taking a step back in time. I think sometimes one of the best ways to not become obsolete is to learn from some of the best in the business that are doing things, and That's why we bring people on the podcast. And one of the unique little bits of advice that people can give is advice to people who are starting out. I'm curious if you could give any advice to anybody who's listening to this that's just generally in the real estate space who's starting out. What would that be?
I actually talk about this a lot. So people will call me and ask this particular question, whether they're young and coming right out of school or they are want to be developers. And my best advice for people with whatever you want to do, be it developing, being starting a factory, it doesn't really matter. You want to make sure you're talking to people and surrounding yourself with people who just know more than you do. Because yes. If you don't do that, you're going to fall apart very, very quickly. And especially people who want to be developers. I'm finding that role to be very misunderstood, and it is an extremely difficult job to do. And so people think, oh, I can put up a bunch of buildings and I'm going to be a developer. It doesn't work like that. So my best advice is find a couple developers, either ask to partner with them or ask to shadow them or ask to be mentored by them, because they have seen the ups and the downs and the ins and the outs. It's hard. It's hard work. And so That's what I try to do. Surround yourself with people who know more than you do all the time.
We've developed nearly 1,000 acres of space across Southlake County alone. And I'll say definitively, I think there's a whole generation of people that came about during the low interest rate period between 08 and 22. And they have no idea how much they rode the wave of low interest rates. And now that they're trying to put deals together, they don't pencil anymore. And we see it over and over and over again in our business. And so particularly with any way that you can get with 50% improvement in terms of build time and 10% cost time, that's going to make a bunch more deals pencil. So we're happy to have you on the podcast.
I'm really excited. Thank you.
One of the ways, though, that we like to learn, and one of the ways I learn besides surrounding myself with people that know far more than me, and there are so many at our firm that do, is books. Because, you know, you can't always sit down and talk to somebody, but you can sometimes see what they've written. So I'm curious if there's a book that we should pick up today.
A book around this. I'm reading something that's just for personal and for fun right now. That's
fine, too. Sometimes expanding our minds is all right.
People's realms. It's The Alchemist. I just picked it up because a couple of people were just talking about that. I'm finding myself in my role needing to understand more mindfulness and other types of leadership pieces for myself. From a real estate perspective, I don't know. What I tend to read is a lot of publications like the Modular Build Institute. I absolutely will put a plug in for them because Tom Hardiman's group does a great job with a great publication. And Gary Fleischer has been a mentor to me as well in his publications and Offsite Dirt. Audrey Grubesic is just, she's a rock star in anything Offsite Dirt. So those three people reading what they put out there, you really will surround yourself with some really good content.
So, besides those names you mentioned, the whole reason for the podcast is bringing on thought leaders in the commercial real estate space, or at least adjacent to it. And I'm curious, who's the next person we should have on the podcast?
I think Audrey Grubesic would be fantastic to have on your podcast if she even has time. She's great. But she's very connected and she knows a lot about a lot. And so she's to me one of the best thought leaders that I have interacted with over the last several years.
Well, if you could make a connection, we'd love to have her on. And the last question is just for anybody who wants to connect with you, what's the best way to connect and reach out?
Yeah, please. I hope people do reach out because I'd love to be able to talk more about the commercial projects we're working on in the Chicagoland area and the residential projects. And my email is my name, RORY at SICBS.com. And just so people know, from SI Container Builds, I don't always tell people this, but the SI stands for Sustainable Imprints. So the SI container builds piece, it really encompasses both the sustainability piece and the container piece. But Rory at SICBS.com.
Rory, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today. We have to have you on in the future.
Thanks, Gordon. Nice to see you.
Thanks again to Rory. We appreciate her insights. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. Your comments, interactions, and subscriptions truly matter, and they help us continue to get quality guests. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanfrew, the Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening.